She's the media maven with her finger on the pulse of the heartbeat of Chicago. If it's happening in the Windy City, she's got you covered. Now here's the lady that puts the fun in fundraising, Candid Candace Jordan.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another podcast. I am so excited to be here with my co-host, my producer, my friend, John St. Augustine. John, how you doing?
Yes, ma'am. I'm doing really great. It's a gorgeous day in Chicago, as
Harry would say.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, I just want to make sure everybody knew who you were impersonating.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm really excited today because, and I say this a lot, but I mean, this person that we're going to be talking to is probably one of my favorite people in this city. I mean, he certainly has such a huge impact. And I mean, he's the most philanthropic person I know, besides being the cutest guy. I mean, next to you, John, no offense, but, you know, he's Israel Adonijé, Izzy, as we call him. And, you know, I knew of him when he played football, but that's not when I really got to know him. I got to know him when he, in the philanthropic world, of which he is such a big part of. So I want everybody to welcome Israel Izzy Adonijé. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, I mean, I know you had a big, big life in football, but you know, let's start from the beginning. You know, you were born in Nigeria and your parents were missionaries, which I thought that was so interesting. So obviously and clearly you followed in their footsteps.
Yeah, it's been an incredible journey, you know, to move from Nigeria when I was 4 years old to Brandon, Manitoba, Canada. And, you know, I grew up in a family of service where we were focused on, my father had a program called Street Love that focused on helping kind of what we today consider like the weaker links in the chain, right? So if we can strengthen the weak links in the chain, you strengthen the chain, you strengthen the community. And that was my father's vision and commitment through Street Love. And that's the environment I grew up in. And ultimately, you know, led me to a place where, you know, through the NFL, I had this great platform. I always thought it was important to do what I could to strengthen, you know, the chains, the links in the chain of the city that was so important to me.
Oh, wow. Well, how did you go from a football player to philanthropy? I mean, I know you have the Israel Adonijé Foundation. Tell us how that transition happened.
Yeah, so, you know, it started really because, you know, I grew up in service. It was always kind of a part of who I was. My father, mm-hmm. through Street Love, we would actually take or be donated to our church all of the food and the perishable items that could no longer be served to people. You know, the 1st and 15th of every month, my father and I and my brothers would go collect all of that food. And then we'd make soups and sandwiches and take it to the homeless people under the bridges, or families who needed food supplement can come pick it up from the church. So that's what I grew up in. And then, you know, having, you know, the just being blessed to, you know, play in the NFL, right? So 2003, I signed to the Bears on a 1 week contract. That one week turned into 10 incredible years. And, you know, the early part of that journey, 2005, I actually got like a real deal, a real contract. And at that point, there was an opportunity to help inspire and motivate some of the kids here in the city that weren't coming to school. You know, so we went into Alex Haley Academy in the South Side, and these kids had registered the lowest attendance. You know, how can you go to school when you're dealing with raising your other siblings? Mm-hmm. You're dealing with hunger. You're dealing with all of these other issues that our kids in the city here deal with. So our program, you know, was called Izzy's Kids, and we were focused on, hey, coming to school, getting an education, leveling up as far as, you know, academically, that is the thing that can actually get you out of where you are in life, that can get you to the next level in life. And that's kind of where it all started. It started with Izzy's Kids. Every Bears game, I had 50 kids and their chaperones come to the game. It was just an amazing experience. As the kids increased their attendance, you know, showing up was the first step. They got extra opportunities. Went to Wicked 3 or 4 times. I took them to Pedorino's for a steak dinner. You know, but as you did well academically, you got rewarded by these additional kind of outings, and it was really special. We had a 27% increase in our attendance in those schools. And that's where it all started. It started there, and we did the All-Star Football Camp. We did the Youth Leadership Program. And, you know, it was just a pleasure to serve Chicago in that capacity, you know, a city, you know, I got to Chicago, I was 21 years old. I was a kid myself, right? So now to be here at 42, as I look back, I just count myself so fortunate to be in, to have been in one place for so long. And the love that I get in Chicago is just really special. And I just count myself really blessed.
Oh my God. Well, you are so loved, Izzy. I mean, I can remember the past three mayors, every single one of them called you Chicago's best ambassador. So, I mean, it's the things you've done for this city. And, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about, I know John's got some football questions, but I want to get into a little bit.
Yeah, I got a
football
few.
Football questions.
I know, just a few.
It's hard times for us right now.
I know, man, I know.
Well, we'll get to that. But I want to tell you, I want to talk about, you know, I did the hard hat tour for your Impact House when you first started this incredible, incredible idea. Can you tell us a little bit about Impact House and what it does?
Yeah, so Impact House is Chicago's premier philanthropy hub, right? Mm-hmm. So at Impact House, we have 60,000 square feet, really a space that's dedicated to the individuals, the organizations, the leaders in Chicago that are committed to changing the city for better, to make the city better, to solve some serious issues around a broad scope of different, you know, topics: hunger, housing insecurity, education, economic development, all these things. So we're fortunate to have, you know, almost 300 members, 80 organizations that are focused on solving Chicago's impact issues. And that was the vision behind Impact, right? Impact work is hard. And it's hard enough to be doing it alone, right? Mm-hmm. So Impact House is a place where you could convene, collaborate, share with other folks. It's a place where you can walk into every day and feel inspired and motivated and just enjoy the environment that you're working in. And our vision is just to hopefully, when it's all said and done, to have been a small part of galvanizing Chicago's impact community and helping to, you know, elevate the work that's being done by these organizations and hopefully spotlight some amazing initiatives that are solving problems. And like I mentioned earlier, ultimately the goal is to strengthen some of these areas in the city that need a little bit more love, that need a little bit more focus. And that was the vision of Impact House. And now to we opened March 2020, horrible timing. And you know, to be now open still and thriving, it's been special.
Well, that's the pure strength of you. I mean, people will, you say something and people will do whatever you tell them to do, Izzy. I mean, you're 6 foot six of pure power. also, Impact Fund, you have a charitable arm that helps local artists too, right? It's called Art of Impact, I think.
Yeah, so we, you know, in Impact House, you know, obviously we have all these great organizations that are funding meaningful work in the city. Internally, Impact House launched the Impact Fund, which will be our way to contribute to that work. Our primary focus through Impact Fund will be supporting organizations and work that's going to solve in a meaningful way education, food insecurity, and housing insecurity. Like, those are three things that we feel in 2020 that as a city, we can really focus on hopefully moving the needle in food insecurity, housing, and education, bridging that education gap. Mm-hmm. And so we launched a campaign called The Art of Impact. We have five incredible local artists that created over 7 days each a massive piece at Impact House that folks are able to either buy. Each piece will have about 50 prints. So any print that's purchased, a portion of the revenue, 60% of the revenue, will go into the Impact Fund that will ultimately help fund work in those three areas. The other 40% will go to the artists themselves to allow them to continue just to create great art and follow their passion. And that project has been amazing. We just wrapped up our first year. And we're looking forward to every year, you know, moving forward to continue just to highlight great artists and let their art hopefully be a pipeline for us to be able to support work that's helping to solve education, hunger, and housing.
And how can people find those pieces of artwork?
Yeah, so if you go to myimpactfund.org, and you'll see the Art of Impact there. Click the Art of Impact and you'll see our first season of all the art. Oh. And you can, I think each piece, it's $200 each piece, and it's limited, like, as I mentioned, only 50 pieces, and you can support through buying some art.
Oh, wow, that's very reasonable. Well, I will definitely go there. I hope everybody does. And now I'm going to switch gears a little bit. I'm told that you're opening up a sports bar and restaurant.
Wait what? A minute. Wait. Go ahead.
Let me know what that's all about.
Yeah, you know, so I've, over my career, I've probably invested in a dozen or more restaurants. And, you know, I love hosting people. Obviously, I love eating food and spending time with my guests and visitors. You know, I remember before every Bears game, my teammates and I would we'd go to a restaurant Saturday night, and we just love the food scene in Chicago is amazing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was an opportunity in the South Loop for me to take over a 7,000 square foot space. So it's we've taken over the space. It's going to be called Signature. It's you know, we the name comes from ultimately as athletes, we're always signing our autographs and signing things. So it'll be an elevated sports bar, you know, paying homage to just the legends of Chicago and what sports means to our great city, but in a really beautiful, aesthetically beautiful space, you know, great food.
God,
I've partnered with Stephen Gillanders.
Sorry. I can't get rid of my phone. Okay, I thought I had it turned off.
People know this is real.
They're calling in as we speak, yes.
I can't wait for my dog to start barking. So when will this be open, Signature?
Yeah, our hope is to open November.
This year?
This year. Wow. Stephen Gillanders. The team is full steam ahead. It's funny because when I said, hey, guys, I want to be open November, they all looked at each other and looked at me like, oh, my gosh, are you serious? But, you know, it's going to be challenging. But my hope is to get open before the season's over so we can all kind of enjoy the season and go there post-game and hang out. And but, yeah, I have a great operator in Stephen Gillanders who operates SKY in Pilsen, Apollonia in the South Loop, and then Valhalla, if you've ever been to three of those restaurants in Time Out Market. So Steven's created an amazing menu. He has a fantastic team that's going to be really driving a great experience. I think the best restaurants that I attend, it's like you walk in, you feel like family. It feels like home. The food, the service is amazing. And that's what we hope to bring to Chicago's community through Signature.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that sounds absolutely spectacular. I cannot wait. I know John and I will be on the invite list for the opening party.
You're not going to be on the invite list. You're going to be on the VIP.
Oh, all right. We'll take it. Well, now I have to say, you know, I know you're a newlywed, barely a newlywed.
Yes.
You married the beautiful Jatna Toribio. Did I pronounce her last name right?
Jatna Toribio.
So I feel responsible for this marriage, Izzy. Because
you do feel responsible?
Yes, I do. Because when I was at an event that you brought her, and as soon as I saw the two of you together, I told you that you were going to get married.
You did tell me I was going to get married. Yes. I do remember that.
And I asked you if I could be your flower girl.
Yeah, you did.
And you screwed me on that.
It was COVID. We got married in COVID.
But I will tell you, she is the most beautiful woman. I mean, inside and out. And I know that she's got a fashion line now, too. Is that right?
Yeah, she's about to launch a makeup line and a fashion line, Toribio. We're really excited about it. I'm a bystander on the development of that product, but it's coming together. It's beautiful. I'm really excited for her to as an entrepreneur, launch her first company. Really excited.
She is a perfect model for her line. I mean, it's going to be great. And I think that she just showed her things at the 900 Shops Fashion Show last night. I saw her name on the invitation. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, well, you saw her name on the invitation? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes.
Her line was on the invitation. Yeah,
it's coming.
Well, here's another iron in the fire. I read somewhere that when you were playing football, you would draw comics to fill your time during training camp. Now, besides all this other stuff that you have going on, you have a comic book company too?
Yes, we have a comic book company called Athleta Comics. And, you know, specifically it was training camp 2007. You know, in that camp, I wanted, you know, training camp is a little bit mundane and it's really repetitious. It's, you know, wake up, breakfast, practice, meetings, practice, more meetings, practice. It's just nonstop for 3 weeks. So that year in particular, I wanted to create a story. And I wanted to tell a story of the origin of athletes, where their ability in sport is actually a byproduct of this greater gift that they've been given that they don't know they have, that's, you know, hidden in internal in their genes. So over that 3 week period, I created the Protectors, and I actually pitched the Bears on a concept that we had called Sports Heroes that we launched with the Bears in 2018. And it was the new Monsters of the Midway, and both the comics and being able to work with the Bears in this kind of comic book universe has been absolutely just fantastic. It's been amazing.
Oh my God, that's awesome. Well, tell me about the TED Talk. John, I know you've got questions. I knew he'd done a TED Talk, but I haven't heard it.
Yeah, if I would have had more time, I would have pulled the audio, because I know I remembered back in my head that you had done one. And I believe this is in Winnipeg, correct?
Yeah, I got an opportunity to do a TED Talk in Winnipeg, Manitoba, where I went to school at the University of Manitoba. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's funny because I prepared this TED Talk, and I assumed with this long TED Talk, because we sent them kind of all the details in advance, that they were going to load it up onto a screen and I was going to read it up off the prompter. I landed in Winnipeg at like 8 p.m., I went on set to kind of see the room, and, you know, they just wanted to test my mic and all the details. And I was like, where are the prompters? And they're like, there are none.
Oh my God.
Oh, you talk about panic setting in, right? So I went home and I literally memorized my whole speech that night. And it ended up being just amazing. But in the morning, the first speaker of the morning, I thought, hey, I'd watched all the speakers throughout the day. And the first speaker absolutely bombed. He forgot everything. Oh. So I got up out of that first talk and I just went to the back and stayed there till I was up before the noon break. And, you know, it was for me, you know, when they asked me what I wanted to talk about, I just really wanted to share what I thought were my keys to the success that I was fortunate to have. And, you know, we position it as five keys to building success in your life. And it ended up being it was well received. It's brought a lot of other opportunities speaking wise to me. And I'm really glad I did it. It was special. Wow.
So I was watching and I'm sitting there and I wasn't taking physical notes, but I was taking mental notes. And I'm thinking to myself, the only way that you could do this talk is because the journey you have been on. This is not a textbook type thing. And this I know. I knew it was pretty difficult to get in the NFL. But according to the NCAA, only 1.9% of NCAA college football players will end up playing pro football. That's from the NCAA. You didn't even have that going for you.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah, I mean, I came from a small unknown school in Manitoba, right?
So I remember reading when you were, look, you're 6'6 in high school and your coach says, like, you're putting a helmet on. You really didn't like it.
So I was running after school programs at the YMCA. I ran a youth leadership program at the Y, and my boss at the program, Kevin Grindy, came to my high school, and it was grade 12, and he said, hey, I want you to come play football. I was like, I don't want to play football. over the following days, because I was a basketball player, he begged me, ultimately convinced me to play. He said, hey, worst case scenario, you'd be great shape for the basketball season. He convinced me I played. At the end of that season, he said, hey, Izzy, I think you're going to be a great football player. I got a tryout for you. I got a spot in the tryouts for Team Manitoba, which is like the provincial team or the state team. Mm-hmm. And I said, hey, thanks. It went in one ear, out the other. Like the week of the tryouts, he called my house just to make sure that we were ready and prepared. My mother answered, and she's like, what tryouts? You know, so I was not planning to go, Against my will, my mother forced us to drive 2.5 hours from Brandon, Manitoba to Winnipeg for the tryouts. I cried on the way. I was not happy.
Wow.
And when I got there, it was competitive, and I went out there and I did really well and I made the team. And at that practice was the head coach of the University of Manitoba, which is where I ended up going to play for 4 years.
Yeah.
And, that's why I always say the importance of having, people who believe in you around you, right? If my mother would have said, oh, you don't want to go, then don't go. Who knows where I'd be today? Yeah. But she said, right, you don't want to go. But Coach Grindy thought enough about your gift, your ability, that we're going to go whether you like it or not. And if it doesn't work out, guess what? You'll just be back here in Brandon. You wouldn't have lost anything, but we're going. And it ultimately changed my life.
So wow, you bounced around. Right. Yeah, you bounced around. And obviously, you didn't get an invite to the combine. You were putting tapes out yourself.
Yeah, so leading up to the combine, I was supposed to obviously have a workout in Manitoba. But my agent called 9 different teams, and we had set up to have a workout in Indianapolis right before the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Right before the their combine in Indy. And right the week of that combine, he got a notice saying any teams coming to watch Israel Adonijay's workout in Indianapolis will lose a first-round draft pick and XYZ.
Yeah.
So we couldn't work out in Indy with those 9 teams. And so we basically made 32 VHS tapes. he as an agent went into the combine. I stood outside and he sent out, Butch Davis, Dave Campo, scouts and coaches. They'd come up, they'd say, hey, Doc Ping sent me over, and I'd shake their hand and I'd give them a VHS tape, and we'd have a small conversation. And that was my combine experience.
Wow.
And it was one of those things that was a little humbling, because as I was outside of the combine, I'm watching all of these potential draft picks going in to do their workouts, and the combine is a big show.
Mm-hmm.
And outside, I just had my brown paper bags and VHS tapes, which don't exist anymore, and we handed that out. And leading up to, so because we weren't able to do that, the only workout I could do was my workout in Winnipeg, Manitoba. And leading up to my workout, we had 9 teams that were going to fly down to Manitoba. And then if you remember, there was the SARS epidemic at that time.
Oh, yeah.
So everybody was flying around. Airports had – everybody had masks on. And leading up to my workout, 8 of the 9 teams dropped out, and the Cleveland Browns. He came, flew up to Manitoba. God bless him. He said he couldn't care less about SARS. He worked me out for about 2 hours, almost killed me. And I signed a free agent deal with the Cleveland Browns that year out of the draft. And I broke my ankle in Cleveland. They sent me home. And then Jerry Angelo signed me to a 1-week contract with the Bears. And that 1 week turned into an incredible 10-year career and just the most incredible experience. I look back like, imagine if I was in Cleveland, Ohio for 10 years versus Chicago.
You'd be opening a different kind of bar, brother. Yeah. I remember watching you play, and I would sit there and go, it's the odds of getting the NFL are slim and none. The average career lasts about 3.5 years. You make it a decade, which is really pushing it. And I remember, I think it was against the Rams, probably back at least 10, if not 12 years ago, you had, I think, 2 or 3 sacks in against the Rams, which is not – sacks are tough enough to come by, but you get a couple in a game is a big deal. And years later, because I grew up being a Rams fan, even though I'm from Chicago, years later the Rams are playing in 2018 in Chicago, and it is bone-chilling cold. My highly significant other surprises me with tickets. We go to Soldier Field. Hadn't been there since I was a kid. And – on the way in, they were handing out your Monsters of the Midway things.
Oh, yeah.
And I still have it. Yeah, the cards. And I thought was the coolest thing. I'm like, the Rams pounded the Bears, so the artwork was worth going in for. but it was so. And I thought, now who thought this up? It's still sitting right over here on my over in my little sports area. And so now I know that you're part of doing that. So, I look at this and I go, these five keys that you really had in your TED talk, and you talked about people that believe in you, all of those things you have to have intact in order to even do what you do. What are a couple of the other ones that people can take away with?
Yeah, that's a good
point. Well, so I think the first key is understanding the game that you're in, right? Understanding the rules of the game, which takes a little education, right? So if you're going to be doing football, it's understanding like, hey, what is this game? What are the rules to my position? If I'm doing real estate, if I'm doing finance, if I'm doing fashion, whatever it might be, understanding the game, right, that you're entering, understanding the rules, understanding the details. Mm-hmm. I think number two is setting for yourself, like, what does a win look like for me in this game, right? And the wins, what I love about measuring your wins or listing out your wins is for everybody, the wins are different, right? Mm-hmm. Going into the NFL, for me, my goals were to play 10 years, to make $1 million, right? When I came in at 21, my goal was to make $1 million over my career, right? You know, to pay off my parents' mortgage, to make a Pro Bowl, to be debt free. So I had all these wins that I had set over my career, which I achieved every single win, right? Mm-hmm. Except the Pro Bowl, I was an alternate. I didn't make a Pro Bowl, but I was an alternate to a Pro Bowl. So I think key number two is in whatever industry or game that you're entering, you define what would winning be like for me and measure it on your own internal goal and vision, not what the next person's doing or what mm-hmm. he or she's doing. It's like, what does winning look like for me? And, you know, in that vein, understanding that achieving anything is hard. So when you accomplish a win, celebrate those wins. I call it those micro wins, right? You like... Every little win that you set, celebrate it, enjoy it, relish it, right? Often we all focus on getting to the very top of the mountain. Mm. And if you don't celebrate to the top of the mountain, that's a long time before you even smile or high five your teammate or high five yourself. But if you, on the way to the top, set 10 wins, like if I get to this first step, hey, I'm going to celebrate. I'm going to look around. I'm going to thank the people that helped me. And then number two, number three, number four, that's just that journey is so much more enjoyable. And, you know, so I always think it's important to set micro wins as you kind of go on your path in that journey in whatever game that you've decided to play in. I think, you know, the fourth would be, you know, find passion right in the little things. You know, I played 10 years, but there's a time in my career where I wasn't a starter. And when I started, believe me, I wanted to start, but that just wasn't in the cards for me out of the gate at 21, right? So I had to play special teams. I had to come in on just third downs. Like there were these other things I had to do. I didn't become a full-time starter till 2009, right? Later in my career. But from 2003 to 2009, I was a journeyman. I did whatever they wanted me to do, but I was intentional about like creating my own value, finding my own value, enjoying and finding passion and like, oh, they want me to run down and cover kicks. Well, I'm going to be the best big man running down and covering kickoffs.
I was going to say the last thing I would want to see is you running on a kickoff. So they set you as a gunner, right? They're expecting you to get down there, right?
I played gunner. Yes.
Yeah, man. I mean, come on.
Wow. Yeah, you know, so just being intentional about finding love in like the little things leading up. You're not always going to be doing what you think you should be doing day one, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, so those are some of the keys from that TED talk that I really drew from my own journey and my experience and my life, and it was just great to share it with folks.
I just got one more question, Candace, and you can take it from here.
Yeah, no.
So Izzy, you sound like a college professor to me that I know. Right. And I know that your background, how you grew up, plays an enormous role in all this for you. I mean, you're driven internally. That's obvious. And when people turn on the NFL or they listen to the guys, you don't hear a lot of what you just said. It's just not there. If it is, we don't hear about it till later, if at all. So do you ever get to spend time with guys who went through what you went through in the NFL and they can relate to you because you're battle tested together, that they're trying to find their way? Because I know I have a lot of friends of mine that are pro athletes that are lost. Their identity was wrapped up with a football helmet or a baseball bat, and they can't seem to function even when the crowd stops cheering or they don't, you know, lace it up on Sunday. So do you do any of that with guys there at all?
Yeah, I mean, I have an open door, right? And over the years, I've always told the rookies and folks that I've had the fortunate to meet that are still playing, it's like, hey, anytime you want to come to see my operation, come to our factory, come to our office, just learn what we're doing, my door's open, right? Especially because I know how difficult it is for guys to transition. I was fortunate because early in my career, I was a fly on the wall when one of the former Bulls called one of my sponsors and he was broke. He needed money. Mm. And she told him, unfortunately, she couldn't give him anything. He said, hey, just pay me whatever you can pay me. I'll sign as whatever you want me to sign. I just need some, some money. And after she got off that call, she looked at me and said, hey, Izzy, when you retire, there's going to be a new 71. And that's the guy we're going to give sponsorship dollars to. So it's imperative you figure out life after football before you hang up your cleats. Wow. And I think that was really what locked me in and helped me hyper focus on like what is going to be that other thing or other things that I'm doing before I retire. And I mean, I was vigilant, you know, every Tuesday I had a meeting with a mentor, our off days, right? I started with real estate. I really wanted to make sure that I had life after football already kind of figured out before I hung up my cleats. And unfortunately, not all the athletes get that opportunity or have that moment to really make sure the reality sets in. So, you know, I'm any athlete, especially any of our athletes here in the city, I don't care what sport, if there's any value or support that I can help with through what I've learned, through kind of the team, my engine, I have an incredible team behind me that helps me do any harebrained idea I come up with, you know, they're like, all right, let's figure out how we can do this, you know, and, but I do think it's important that, and it's happening. I think there's a shift in like these new athletes where they will be much better prepared, you know, hopefully than the older generation of athletes and preparing for post-career.
Yeah. There's a syndrome called disposable hero syndrome. You know this?
No.
Yeah, so this is when guys like you go out, even college athletes, they go out and the accolades, the money, all that comes on them, and they think it's going to last forever, and of course it doesn't, and they really don't know what to do, and they become a disposable hero. And there more fall through the cracks than you can possibly imagine. So while it's 1.9% getting into the NFL, it's about a 99% rate on the way out that they're going to fail.
Oh,
it's tough. So you know, I just think that, you know, maybe one of your other harebrained ideas at some point, there'll be some sort of thing for, you know, closed door and private. It's not for, you know, for everybody, but I just think these guys and the women that play deserve more from us as fans than they get when they're out the door is what I'm getting at.
I agree. Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. Yep. So Izzy, what would you do about the Bears? What advice would you give them?
I was waiting for that.
Yeah. I mean, wow. It's tough to start a season that everybody was so hopeful for, you know, 0-2, right? I think, listen, everywhere I go, literally over the last few days, everywhere I go, I have folks telling me, hey, are you ready to suit back up? And I'm like, absolutely not. You know, so but it's tough. But a season like this is an opportunity. One, it's still early. You can turn it around. Mm-hmm. But you've got to start getting things right, you know, ASAP. You got to start figuring out, you know, the new identity or the identity for this season quickly. And it's been a tough one to watch. I'm hopeful, you know, going into this one on Sunday versus the Broncos, it's a game we gotta figure out how to get.
Mm-hmm. Who were some of your favorite players then and now?
Oh, then and now, I mean, obviously, when I played, I had an amazing roster of teammates, right? Just to list one is just, I mean, we really culturally had a really special locker room while I played defensively with the Bears, right? Yeah. So you look at our defense across the board, we actually spent a lot of time together outside of just practice and meeting rooms. But while at Awale Agunle, I'm godfather to his kids, we just actually had the Bears alumni game, and we had a bunch of guys come in town, so it's always great catching up with the guys. But the guys I played with, it was really special to be in a locker room where it was a brotherhood. We had each other's backs. You know, if any of those guys were to call me, you know, it would be like, you know, no time was lost at all. We all just get back into being teammates again, and that's just really special.
That's awesome. Who do you like now?
Well, I mean, now I would say, you know, someone I'm really hopeful for is Justin Fields. I think he's been in the media a lot as of late, you know, with some of his interviews and some comments that he'd made. But he's a young, talented kid. You know, the way the NFL is going and has gone, you know, you gotta have a talented quarterback in order to win these games, right? The game is a passing game more than ever. Just such a good kid, humble, you know. So I'm really in Justin's corner and hoping that, you know, with him, he just gets back to playing loose, having fun, and just, you know, kind of delivering on the magic that, you know, he's able to deliver on. And that helping the team get some wins, right? So, you know, I'll be there this Sunday, and we'll be cheering hard.
You know, people forget he's only 24 years old.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I got shoes older than Justin Fields. So we got to, and I know he's on the pressure cooker, and I get all that, and yet I realize, you know, he's still maturing as a human being, and he may have all the tools and stuff, but those things don't all just jive together at once. You can look across the board at a lot of great players that had, you know, the first couple, 3 years they were in the league, there were nothing going on. The next thing you know, they're in the Hall of Fame. So I got a lot of hope for this kid too. I think if they just figure out how to keep him safe in the pocket and let him do his thing, he's right up there with Mahomes in my business. He's a little bigger than Mahomes. I think he's a little more bruising and runs better. So I think he's got the tools. We just got to be a little patient with the kid.
Aww.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. Well, Izzy, my last question, if you could have a conversation with your younger self starting in the NFL, what advice would you give him?
Oh, a message or a conversation with my younger self. I'd say, hey, Izzy, slow down. You know, you don't have to do it all today or tomorrow or the next day. I would tell myself to enjoy it a little bit more. I was a little bit of not that I was too focused on kind of building, but I didn't necessarily enjoy, you know, I was just really kind of focused on kind of what I was trying to achieve and where I was trying to go. I mean, I'm driven by a fear of failure. So I don't want to fail, and that kind of consumes my everyday. So I would tell myself, like, hey, take a step back, breathe a little bit. You're not going to fail. You're going to be all right, but like enjoy. And, you know, in my TED talk, when I talk about enjoying the journey a little bit, I think that comes from that place of having experienced my journey. And now, although we've had success, you know, I always put myself in a pressure cooker, you know, so yeah, enjoy it, relax. And then I'd also just, you know, tell myself early in my career, make sure I spend more time on like my recovery, my cold tub, hot tub, massage. Like early in my career, I didn't do any of that. I was just athletic ability and God-given, like, you know, health. Not till later in my career, I was like, oh my gosh, like when you're doing these little things, it helps in a significant way. So those are a few things I would tell to my younger self. To hopefully, you know, get a little bit more longevity and just enjoy what's been an incredible journey.
Oh, wow. You are absolutely amazing and such an inspiration. Chicago is so lucky to have you, and I am so blessed to have you and Jatna for friends. Please give her my love. Thank you for spending time with us. Thanks for all your great advice. I know it'll help so many people, and you are absolutely a legend. Thank you.
Thank you. I love you. And I'm so fortunate to have Chicago as well. So thanks.
He's something else, huh?
He's unbelievable. He's un-effing believable.
Un-effing believable. And, you know, I was kind of pushing at that point about this disposable heroes concept, because we put so much on the men and women that entertain us. They put their bodies on the line.
Right.
And their health on the line. Right. I have friends of mine, you know, that played in the NFL, and they've had, you know, every problem you can imagine physically. Oh. So, and then next thing you know, the assembly line cranks up and we get the next number 71 in. To see him and to hear everything he's doing, to me, just enhances the fact that just because he's not playing football, it's just a different field he's on.
Definitely.
He's and I just, yeah, he's he absolutely, is. That's fantastic.
I mean, you know, and I think that he was so lucky to have a mother. I'm sure that his mom and dad had such an impact on him and his brother. I mean, that, I mean, who would give advice like that? What a smart mom to say, you know, it's your call, but you're going to try it no matter what.
Yeah, and I'll tell you something. Look, you know, there was a time I thought I was playing for the Bears. You know, I'm 6'2", 240. I could do this. Yeah. But that's just the thought you have. The odds of getting the NFL are slim to none. The fact that this guy comes from Nigeria, goes to Canada, grows up to be 6'6" basketball player. They talk him into playing football. His mom makes him go. I mean, look at all the little corners that had to be turned for him to get here today.
Exactly. It's
fantastic.
Fate, though.
Yeah, it is.
And you know, I hope he writes a book. I mean, I know every day he's probably writing a book in his mind because, I mean, anybody he comes in contact with is going to learn something to be inspired by him. I know I was when I first met him. I mean, not only is he just an adorable man to begin with, period, but I mean, then he's got all this knowledge and common sense behind him, and it's the full deal, man.
He has used the platform given to him with great admiration. No doubt.
I could not agree more. And well, that was really something. I'm kind of on a high here now.
Yeah.
A little cloud. Woo-hoo. Yeah. I got to take a breath. Anyway, that was great. I'm so glad he was on with us. That was awesome. Absolutely awesome. Let's see. Well,
yeah, how do we top all that, right?
Yeah, there's hard to top it. But I will tell you that we went to the last night we had quite a night at the After School Matters Gala.
Oh, did you?
It's a little segue there.
Did you stay out late?
Not at the event, but I couldn't sleep afterwards because, you know, it was a real stimulating event. Yeah. I mean, the mayor was there. The mayor gave a great speech for these kids. I mean, After School Matters obviously does what the name implies. Right. It provides programs for these teens. And, I mean, they just do so much good. And I love the mayor. He said, he got on the podium and he says, "I can't tell you how proud I am to be the mayor of the best freaking city in the world." I thought, well, that's pretty put out there. But, I mean, he's got a lot of personality, and, you know, whether you like, you know, the fact that he's a mayor or not is beside the point. He's just, it was inspiring. And they had it was at Offshore at Navy Pier, which is a spectacular venue. And they had the kids perform, and people were dancing with the students, and they had all kinds of little booths with their, you know, where they sell their artwork, and, you know, they're learning how to do CPR. I mean, it's just, it was really quite an event. It was a... And I was thrilled to be there to witness it. So, and that kept me up at night, not to mention the little dog that we have. So,
yeah, how's the pooch?
Well, the pooch is absolutely, she's the smartest dog we've ever had. And the problem with that, it's good news, bad news. The bad news is that she's smarter than we are, John.
Now, how do you gauge that?
Well, because, I mean, she's got that look in her eyes like, oh, God, I hope I'm not going to disappoint her by doing this or doing that. I mean, she makes you want to be a better person, John.
wait a minute, sister.
Well, she's that kind of a little dog. She's got, there's something really kind of eerie about her where she's got this, like, sixth sense. I can't explain it, but, I mean, I've taught her, you know, little things, and she's learned it after, like, three times.
Like, go get me a coffee.
Write this article for me.
But
she's only 3 months old, and I'm telling you, we are both, you know, neither one of us, we both kind of wanted a dog and didn't want a dog because, you know, we're not young people.
Yeah.
And we had lost our two dogs, you know, years before, and they really had a big, you know, big place in our hearts. And so Chuck definitely didn't want a dog because he never thought anybody could replace the Mickey or Rooney.
Sure.
And so Paws kept calling and having us meet these other dogs and this and that. And then when we saw this Penny, this little girl, I mean, it's just something snapped. And
really?
I mean, she just stole our hearts instantaneously. So when the time comes, it's right. And I'll tell you the truth, she's really changed our lives. I mean, she's, you know, there's a lot of stress, obviously, in what you do, what I do.
Yep.
And to have this little dog bouncing around, playing with toys, and, you know, it makes you, I mean, you have to have that kind of, you know, break, and she provides it. So,
you know, we have a 16-year-old cat named Walter.
16 years old,
yeah. And Walt, I thought Walt was done about 6 months ago, but he rebounded because he's on his 19th life, not his 9th or 7th. And every single morning, without fail, he's the first greeting I get is from him. And I have to go sit with him and have to talk with him. And I'm thinking, that's not a bad way to start the day.
No, definitely not.
You know? So,
well,
you said something off the air. What did you say? Penny's a healer of hearts.
She's a healer of hearts. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I don't think I said that, but I'm going to take credit for it. Thank you.
You said something like that. That she's changed your lives and she's a healer of hearts. So there you go.
She's a healer of hearts. Well, I'm going to stick with that. I like that. Right. You put it in a much better way than I did. Well, you know, I went the Flair Fashion Show. I wanted to mention, you know, I've talked about it before and now it's happened. It was for the Chicago Lighthouse. They had their biggest fundraiser yet with 275 women and men at the at the Ritz-Carlton, and I'm telling you, it was so fabulous. You know, I convinced Chef Art Smith to model, and so he escorted me down the runway.
Are there pictures of this?
There's lots of pictures. He had really? On a brilliant red jacket, red glasses, white pants. I mean, he was an absolute doll, and I got Val Warner and her husband, Joba Maxi, to model, and Chili Pepper, the famous female impersonator, was on the runway. Oh, my God. It was really, it was star-filled. It was fun. They raised a lot of money for this great nonprofit, and it honored my dear, dear friend, to top this all off, Tracy Tarantino de Bono, who was one of the most deserving honorees. I mean, what she does for the Lighthouse and for the city of Chicago in general is just mind-numbing. So she was a really deserving honoree, and it was a real special, special afternoon. And then that night was Hamburger Hop.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Chicago Gourmet. And they had 1,000 people at the Harris rooftop. Oh, my God.
1,000?
1,000. I don't know how. You couldn't even get to the burgers. But but in the end, you know, the host of the event was Chef Stephanie Isard of Girl and the Goat. She's absolutely adorable. And then they had a host of a panel of judges that included Sylvia Perez and Leanne Trotter and Billy Deck and Phil Vitale. And in the end, they had 15 competitors, and in the end, this guy from Seattle, I can't even pronounce his name, quite frankly. I don't know. I've never heard of
him. The hamburger guy.
Yeah, but he won both of the awards.
Wow.
The Best Burger and the People's Choice Award.
Wow.
And, you know, the judges, they don't know whose burgers are whose, obviously.
Oh, yeah, right.
So, you know, you've got it. It's all a taste test that they had to, like, down 15 burgers one after
another. Oh, I'm in for that next time. Just sign me up for that.
I'll put your name
Thank
in
you.
As a judge.
Thank you.
But that's who they voted for. So, I mean, I should know his name. Well, you could see it on my website.
Yeah, and we have some audio from that, don't we?
Oh, my goodness, yes. Well, here, let me tell you a little bit about this woman. This is Chef Dominique Leach, and she, I'm sorry, but in my opinion, she was my vote. Chuck and I both voted for her. Even if her burgers were horrible, her personality was like nothing you've ever seen before. Listen to this clip and you'll see what I mean.
No, it's Crane's. Crane's business.
So, Dominique, so tell me what you think about being here at Hamburger Hop and how did you get involved and what are your thoughts on
the event? I'm ecstatic to be at Hamburger Hop. I love full circle moments. I've worked this event as the sous chef at Paramount Events for many years, and I couldn't be more proud of myself to be here representing myself and my own company.
Yeah, oh my goodness. So what do you see down the road? Where do you want to be? What do you have planned next?
The sky's the limit. I just signed my first book deal. The city knows I just won Master of Q on Barbecue Raw, Bobby Flay's Food Network show. So we're here to have fun. I'm here to represent my brand and myself and continue to show the city what I'm made of. We got some of the best chefs in the world right here in Chicago. If you don't know about us, come and visit us. I mean, this is an amazing time. It's like a family reunion. I'm happy to be a part of it.
Is she the cutest or
what? Oh, yeah. A little bit on fire there. Good for her.
Oh, she's loaded with personality. And, you know, she's the chef owner of the Lexington Betty Smokehouse, which is located at 756 East 111th Street in Chicago.
A smokehouse.
Oh, we cannot wait to go and try it out because she's just something special. And let's see, Saturday night, we also had an event. We went to the Symphony Ball, which was at the Four Seasons. And it was extremely elegant. It's black tie. And they started at the Symphony Center, obviously. And this is the first time that Ricardo Muti was introduced as the music director emeritus for life.
Wow.
Which he's, you know, just been named. And I mean, it was, you know, I never knew he had such a personality.
Yeah, you wouldn't know that.
No, because he's got that very austere face. And I think I read somewhere where he really chastise some guy in the audience for the cell phone going off and everything else. So, yeah. You know, everybody sits there like that soup Nazi on Seinfeld, you know, just, you know, yes,
like
sir,
the soup Nazi.
Yes, sir, I'll have one bowl of soup, please. Right. And then they move to the side, you know, whatever he tells you to do, you're going to do. But at one point during the thing, there was a Leonidas Kavakos, this soloist violinist who was, oh, God, like, unbelievable. And mind you, I'm not an aficionado of classical music. I just know what I like. And this was an incredible special event. But at one point, there's a silence in the room. And Moody leans from the podium down to the violinist. And they say something. And then nobody could hear him. And then they, you know, they continue with the orchestra. And so later, Moody says, in case you were wondering what I was saying, he says, we were talking about Giordano's pizza.
Oh!
So it was, he had a really darling sense of humor. And afterwards, the gala at the Four Seasons was so elegant. I mean, the room was all done in these massive floral arrangements, you know, like all these fall colors by VH Designs. Actually, the VH Designs is owned by Vince Hart, who, surprisingly and coincidentally, he used to do our Christmas decorations.
Oh, no kidding.
At our house, yeah, 30 years ago. That's
well, and those
I've
are
known.
Probably still up from 30 years ago, knowing
yeah,
you.
Yeah, they definitely are. Thank you, John. But anyway, you know, the gala was beautiful, and there was all kinds of speeches, and, you know, they talked about all the things they've done. And, you know, Northern Trust, who is their main sponsor, has been supporting and sponsoring this event for 135 years since the symphony was founded.
Oh my
Chicago
gosh.
Symphony was founded in 1891. I mean, how incredible is
that? Well,
that's
serious commitment there.
There you go. I would like to have advertisers like that that just stuck by me for
135
years.
Yeah. Well, you'll have to be at a different co-host at that point. I'll be done.
Oh, no, no, you won't. You're going to be with me forever, whether you like it or not. And tonight we have the Big Shoulders Fund, which I love. That's Josh Hale is the executive director of this and president or CEO. He's everything for this Big Shoulders Fund. And they, you know, they take care of the Chicago public schools, Catholic schools around the city, and they do an absolutely awesome job. So I'm looking forward to that. Dancing with Giordano Stars, I'm going to co-host this event. Ryan Baker's the main host. I'm going to introduce the show. And that's going to be Thursday, October 5th at Park West. And this is where all the professional dancers from Giordano Dance Company will pair up with everyday individuals, and they each compete for the title of, you know, best male, best female, and people's choice. So it's really a great, fun, and entertaining evening that goes for a great cause. Lyric Opera Gala is October 6th with Audra McDonald.
Oh, boy.
Listen,
can we get her on the show?
Oh,
I'm
going
to work
try.
On that. Listen, if there was one human voice in the whole world that brings me to tears, it's Audra McDonald.
I am telling you, you know, I'll work on that. I will
Please
definitely do. Work on that.
Well, yeah. I mean, not that they need any promotion from us, but I'm telling you right now, when I saw the NBC presentation of The Hills Are Alive with the sound of Music, and she played in the, there's the answer, John. And she does the song, you know, that Mother Abbess did. I'm literally getting goosebumps right now thinking of her doing it. I've never heard anything like that.
Oh, no, I'm telling you, I agree with you. I think she's absolutely phenomenal.
When is that? October wait. When?
And that's October 6th at the Lyric Opera. It's their gala, and she's the opening performer for their gala.
See, the problem with me is I'd go and listeners sing and I'd leave, which is probably not the best thing.
No, you'd be at the villa with a bourbon or something.
Now we're talking, sister.
Yeah, I know. I know all about how you operate. Well, you know, the Costume Council of the Chicago History Museum, I'm going to get through this whether you like it or not, is going to have a incredible event. They're going to present the President's Circle Award to fashion designer Christian Siriano, who I absolutely love and admire. I mean, I love the fact that he designs for women of all sizes. And I think, I don't know of anybody else that does that, because he was the first to do this. Mm-hmm. And so he's developed this amazing following, me being one of them. And it's going to be at the Four Seasons. And my friend Pam Capitanini is going to be a co-chair along with David Mordini. And co-hostesses are Tina Gravel, Rose Callis, and Dusty Stemmer, also all friends. So it's going to be a really wonderful afternoon at the Four Seasons on October 12th. So if you can get tickets to that, it would be a really interesting discussion with him, I think. Would you like to come and hear the discussion, John?
What day is this?
I'm not going to tell you because I know you're going to say you're busy.
No, I think the folks want to hear what day it is again.
Yes, just, October 12th.
Yeah, I can't make it.
Yeah, okay. There you. I walked right into
you
it.
You know what I'm doing October 12th? Can I tell you? This is real for real.
Really?
Okay. I'm driving to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan to see my grandbabies.
My identical twin grandbabies. Twins.
Yes. Vessi and Gwenny.
And when's the last time you saw them when they were born?
When they were born July 18th at 9 o'clock in the morning. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. They're going to be so changed and different, like little humans.
And I bought a t-shirt with a big dinosaur on it. It says Papasaurus Rex.
You're a good grandpa.
Well, we'll see.
That'll be fun.
Yeah. So I really am busy. I'd love to go, but I can't.
You are busy. Yeah. Oh, stop it. You're lying. Anyway, also, Music of the Baroque, which I love. Declan McGovern, who's the executive director, does a phenomenal job with this. As Jen Moore, same on this for this nonprofit. And they're going to have their gala on Saturday, October 21st. And it's going to honor sculptor Richard Hunt, who I think is going to be a really terrific event. So that'll be October 21st. And, you know, the Navy SEAL Foundation that I told you.
Yes, that's very impressive. Yep.
Yeah. Well, that my article about this Midwest Evening of Tribute came out in Cranes today. So if you can catch it, please check it out, because I think it's a really good article, and it really shares the patriotism, and, you know, it's saluting heroes, and it's just a feel good article in Cranes that came out today. And so on my final event note, this is so much fun. I did this last year for Harry Carey's at Navy Pier. I was the judge and host of their Howl, H-O-W-L, Oween pet contest.
Very innovative.
Yes, and it's going to be Saturday, October 28th. And John, I am going to tell you, the costumes that people come up with, there is so much creativity out there. It was hysterical. So if anybody can come out and join us Saturday, October 28th at Harry Carey's at Navy Pier, it's going to be a lot of fun.
What are you going to be dressed as? Playboy Playmate? Something original? Yeah.
I can't get the costume in my arm, John.
Listen, I have to ask you, have you and Chuck ever gone and he's dressed up as Hefner and you've been yourself?
No, but I did years and years ago dress in my costume for a Halloween party that we had for the, it was the Dearborn Neighborhood Association. I co-hosted the event with someone I can't remember, Barry somebody that I can't remember his last name.
Okay.
But that's the last time I could fit into my costume. So we'll discuss that at a later date.
Now, yes.
Wait, I have to say this. Now, this is really big. Now, I'm going to co-chair this event on Friday, October 13th, and it's the Eversight. It's their 25th anniversary celebration. And I'm going to return as a co-chair with Michael Caputo, who is one of my dear, dear friends. We have the best time doing this. And it's going to honor our first podcast guest, John Roback, along with Dr. Maria Soledad at the Peninsula, Friday, October 13th. It's going to be a great night. We're going to make it, we're going to have silver decor. We're going to have some surprises. It'll be inspiring, and it'll be so much fun. We'll dance, we'll drink. That's your kind of party, John. You could come to this.
I'll drink, you dance. Maybe I'll dance later.
All right, well, there you go.
There you go.
Anyway, so look at all the stuff that's going on. Isn't this fun?
You know, I've told you this before. Before we ever started this little experiment of the Candid Candace podcast, one of the main things that's so important that I always take away from this is you don't hear this anywhere else, kids. You don't hear about all these good things that are going in the city, all these people making a huge difference. Nope, Izzy Adonide did not spend 38 minutes with anybody else today but you.
Oh, bless your heart.
Well, I'm just saying, it's really important what's said here, you know?
Well, you know, you got me to do this, and I'm so grateful to you for, you know, convincing me that this was a good thing, and it has turned out to be fabulous. And moreover, I really love doing this with you. I mean, it would not work with anybody else, and so I feel very, very privileged, and I love it. I absolutely love it. I hope everybody loves it as much as I do.
Well, same to you, because I see in you what all everybody that shows up on this show to be guests and connect with you, whether it's Izzy or Kogan or anybody, all the rest of them, they all see the same thing I do. You do such good in this city. We want to support that. This is the best way to do it. Plus, you're friggin' hilarious without even trying.
Well, I asked Chuck, so I got good news, and some days are good, some days are not so good.
Yeah, what I want to do next is put a microphone in there and want you guys record all day, and I'll just grab stuff. That ought to be interesting.
That would be really interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, I have asked Chuck and wanted him to sometimes do like a, you know, a Q&A, like, you know, a husband and wife. We've been married 34 years. And and so, you know, one time we did a little thing somewhere, I don't know, and he's just a little... He doesn't like to be in the
front. Yeah, I get it. I think if I had two mics there and I said go, you'd ask him a question. He'd say yes or no, and that'd be about it.
Yeah, that's about all we'd get out of him. Yeah, he would have more to say, but he just wouldn't care to say it. Oh well. Anyway, we're excited that this has been a great show. I hope everybody has enjoyed it. I hope you're going to look forward to our next one together, and I hope you have a great weekend.
Thanks for listening to the Candid Candace podcast. For more of what's going on in Chicago, go to CandidCandace.com.